Welcome to Interpod, the Global Voices of Pride podcast powered by Interpride, where the world comes together for the LGBTQIA+ community. I'm Michelle Niel, your host. This special episode is the launch of the Colorism series hosted by Richard Brether Bell, Vice President of Accessibility, Diversity, and Inclusion, Co-Chair of Human Rights and Diversity Committee, and also the Coordinator of ROPE, Racism and Oppression Awareness Program. Richard speaks with Nicolas Rodriguez, who's the Vice President of Global Outreach and Partnership Management for Interpride.
Hey, everyone. My name is Nicolas Rodriguez. I am the Vice President of Interpride for the Latin American area.
Today, what we're going to talk about is colorism. So colorism is a form of intra-racism. So we're talking about racism based on color that takes place within typically communities of color. We know that it has its roots, certainly in colonialism, even in countries that were not colonized, surrounding areas were, and that influence is felt globally. So this is the struggle the community of color have. Nicolas, let me ask you, what has been your experience with colorism?
It's very interesting, Richard, because I think I told you in the past, in the last video, that when you are a Salvadoran and living only in El Salvador, you don't think on this topic. But when you cross the borders, when you go to another part of Central America, you notice that. You notice that you are even in between Latinos, there's different level of colorism in Latinos, and that's when the situations happen. Let me put you a very close example that we had just a few weeks ago when my husband and I, we went to Costa Rica. Costa Rica is well known as, the people said, like the Switzerland of Central America, the wealthy country of Central America, etc. And what's interesting that when we are passing the border, we saw how a marriage, a typical North American marriage, was passing in the border, and they don't have any troubles to pass together. But when we start to walk together as husband to the border, the officer said, no, you went first and you went first. And the one of the reason is because he see different of color between us. And the treatment to my husband was extremely bad. They make a lot of question to give the entrance. And when I got the second to them, the question was lesser. What was a less question? And I even say to the police, how difficult is this situation, not only in color, is about being an LGBT person, because we are husband and we have the right to walk in the border point together, and you don't allow us, and you did a lot of question to my husband why, and he in a very ironic position told me because I was thinking he was Nicaraguan person. He directly said to me, I was your husband is a Nicaraguan person. And Nicaragua is the country next to Costa Rica that they have this complex situation about the borders. It's completely true that in every level in our countries, even in the global south, the colorism is present. You can see that even in the malls, you can see in the shopping centers. Sometimes you can see maybe a white boy is walking in the area of the shopping center and no one says any. But if a guy of is a color person or Latino person walking, people goes to there and say, excuse me, how much cost this? Like assuming that person works there, but they don't assume that when it's a white person. And that happened a lot here in Latin America.
Nicolas, is your husband darker than you are?
Yes, he's darker than not typical in El Salvador. It is the thing that I tried to say in the beginning, that in El Salvador, because we 100 years ago, we have a dictator who banned all the race, all the people of color in El Salvador. People of color is not common in El Salvador. But my husband is a person of color, and I promise you, I recognize that until I was married with my husband, I see that. Before that, I need some this small violence I never noticed before, and that is important. That is the reason because we talk about this topic, because the visibilization of the situation is important. Because even me, let me put that as an example, my friend. I believe in my husband in the first months or the first weeks of dating, my first reaction always was, "You are sure? Are not you overreacting?" That was my word in the first months. But I start to learn to get focused and look on the detail, and I start to look from his point of view and I say, "Oh my God, that is true. That is true. How violently are we, even the Latinos, with other Latinos?" We try to say, "And oh, we use the colorism just for jokes." No, it's not for jokes. It's included in the people who select people in the front desk for any companies or for some type of job that requires some level of beauty. This requirement normally pick up person who are more white than color people.
So, Nicholas, you said that while you're in El Salvador, you personally don't experience this. But what happens when you leave El Salvador? Are you treated differently because of the color of your skin?
Yes, of course. It's funny again, speaking in a very confident way, it's funny because maybe it's a very Salvadorian thing, that because all of us are mixed color person. Well, I don't know the word in English, my friend. We say mestizo, but it's a very specific lighter brown. But when you go out to Guatemala or Mexico, you notice the discrimination and the situation that maybe you don't feel in your comfort zone. I will use that word, comfort zone. But for me, the most surprising thing is normally when we speak globally about this, we are speaking about the discrimination between the white person against a black person. But this happened a lot in other races and in between the races, because it's like if you have a benchmark of the level of the tone of the color, and depending on the tone of the color, you will treat it like that between Latino, between Asians, between everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the reasons why we wanted to do this is because I think oftentimes when people think of colorism, they think about black and white. But when we talk about the global phenomenon of colorism, we know that it takes place in communities outside of black communities. They include Latino communities, East Asian, South Asian communities as well. And so oftentimes, or if not all the time, it has its roots in colonialism. We know that colorism was a tool used to cause division. In the United States, you had reports during the times of slavery. You heard reports of Haiti freeing itself by very violent means and killing the slave owners in order to be free of slavery. And so we had a lot of slave owners in the United States who got scared of that and decided to use a tool of divide and conquer. So if we can keep the people warring against each other, then they're less likely to unite, because once they unite, they become dangerous. So what concerns me now, and I'll ask you this, is that so all these years later, with the effects of colonialism, we still have this colorism. What do you think is in store for the next generation? How are they going to deal with it? Is it going to be better for them?
I have the hope that it's going to be better for the new generation, for sure. In fact, I don't know much was the caste division or level division in the colonialism in North America. But in Latin America, that the Spanish Empire was the domination in these lands, we have two centuries ago, we have a very divided caste or division groups of people. There was the European whites, the European son of the European who born in America, and even they don't want to have higher positions in that colonial era. And then after them was the mestizos, the mix, the marriage the Spanish person with another person from the native lands of Central America, and then the black person, then the black person mixed with Latinos. So yeah. And that time, a few years ago, even in your act of beard, in your paper, the paper that you born this day, they put a few decades ago what was your color skin and what were your ascendants. What is surprisingly, even people even cannot get a level of credit in the banks or access to the some housing here a few, maybe 20, 25 years ago, if in the act of birth appears something like that. So when I saw the past and I see the present, it's my hope that the future is going to be better for the new generation. And I know that when we speak about the globalization, we speak many bad things about the globalization, I know. But if I can save something about the globalization, I mean the social, the mass media, the globalization of the media around the world, is gives the opportunity to see to the new generation, see the how variety, how different, how multicultural, how diversity is the world itself. And I think this sort of popular education gave the sense to the people that the world is not only full of people like you are. Instead of that, the world is full of people different than you. And I when I start traveling, because I feel blessed that being a Salvadorian, because Salvadorian passport is a very difficult passport to walk in the world. But I have the privilege to fly around the world. And I saw how many cities or so many countries that when they give the welcoming to the inclusion, when they give the welcoming to the multiculturalism, I noticed that countries or that cities are more peaceful, more well-educated, and more equity, because they allow that. They celebrate the diversity.
Right. One of the things you mentioned I wanted to touch on, because when we have these conversations about colorism, this is not something to make people feel like, oh, maybe they feel guilty because they're white and this was something that was introduced through colonialism. But I think we need to focus on the importance of it. And it's not something that's just limited to communities of culture, of color, saying that that's their problem that they have to work out. One of the things you mentioned, this can affect your livelihood. colorism can affect you having enough opportunities at work, getting jobs, getting promotions. It can affect where you're able to live. So I guess one final question I have for you, as leaders in the Pride movement, what can we do to make the situation better, whether we are people of color or not?
What we can do as a Pride organizers to make that this situation of colorism was avoid, if use our Pride events to help to more equity. And I think one of the great things that you can do is try to, for example, your volunteers team must to be the most diversity as possible. And I not only say in terms of there's more trans, there's more queer, there's more non-binary, there's going to be more people of different colors. Again, like I said, maybe some of us have a special case because we live a different situation about the past, about the colorism. But I use this example to say how we in the Pride events, we do something to change that. It is we try to mix the population, try to, people work together. But when you make a different mix of people of color, people of different regions of your country, and looked at my country is very, very, very thin. People after tell us in the comments, oh, what's so great, because I met people from this area and they have different lifestyle on different way of thinking, and was so enrichful to me participating in the volunteering because I saw different point of view, a different way of living. So we maybe looks smaller, but no, it's huge, because number one, you are sharing the diversity one by one. And normally, and that is for sure, maybe El Salvador, maybe Germany, maybe Bangladesh, but it's the same case. Normally, from the volunteer groups appears in the future the leaders of the Pride movement of the future. So that's important. The other thing is the validity of the existence of the visibilization of the multiculturalism that we have. For example, we always said we always say here in the past, there's no Afro descendants, and in El Salvador we say, and we were wrong, because when 2 years ago we asked, hey, let's make a festival for celebrating the Afro descendants in El Salvador, appears more people who send us emails said, hey, that's true. My father was from Haiti. My father was from the coast in Honduras. For real, we will do this festival celebrating the Afro descendants in El Salvador. Yes, let's do that. And was super nice, super, super good that in the last 2 years we have this event in El Salvador. And what's funny seeing how the people making question like, there's colored person in El Salvador? That is true. What's interesting, see that even if people didn't know people of color in our country. So why I say that? Because for sure, videos like this one, like when people in expert in the topic like you speak about the typical colorism around the world, it's important that we Latinos, we Asians, we the Global South acknowledge too there's colorism and there's racism inside our communities too. And we must do this action. For the smaller that it is, that small step makes big changes.
I think you hit the nail on the head. We need more visibility that would provide opportunities for people to discuss this openly so that it's not such a stigmatizing topic. And I also agree that, you know, by acknowledging the bias that we have within our communities, that puts us in a better position to combat it. So absolutely 100% agree. Well, Nicholas, thank you so much for sharing your perspective.
I will add something more. For example, when after this situation that happened with my husband and I in Costa Rica, we suggest to the our pride in Costa Rica that they make a special event for Nicaraguans living in Costa Rica to use the pride movement to teach that we are the same, we are equal. There's no, in LGBT community, there's no borders. The borders put another bad thinking people, but we the LGBT, we are the edge of the spear in the advancing of the movement, not only the pride movement, the equity movement. And that is important. I think I try to put this example because these small actions, like I say, make great, great changes. Thank you for your time, my dear Richard.
Thank you so much, Nicholas. I agree, silence is complicity. So the Pride movement should be used as the tool to provide education and awareness. So thank you for sharing your perspectives. I think they're incredibly valuable. And my hope is that people walk away with this in a better position to have conversations, difficult conversations at times, about the effects of colorism. So once again, thank you so much, Nicholas.
You're welcome, my friend. It's important to speak about this topic, even with the barrier of the language. Do you know that I am not a native with English speaking, but I think it's important, even with these barriers, we need to talk in every part of the world. We need to do that.
Thanks so much for listening to Interpride. Visit interpride.org to listen to all past episodes that you may have missed. There you can also find more information about our World Conference, about World Pride, and also maybe to connect with other members. If you're not a member, become a member today. We would also love if you would submit your ideas to the podcast. If you'd like to be a contributor, we'd love to hear from you. I'm Michelle Miel, host of Interpride, the Global Voices of Pride podcast, powered by Interpride, where the world comes together for the LGBTQIA+ community.